Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Yo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Yo Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajika Acharya Stotra Sutta Sri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nitai Gopremanande Hare Go Samadita Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Agri Sriya Samagrati Agri Sriya Samagrati Agri Sriya Samagrati Agri Sri Sri Guru Gaura So tonight we'll discuss this verse from Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter. You can follow our usual procedure here. You can repeat. Actually, let me do the word meanings, which I like to do. Yanti go, Devavrata, worshippers of demigods, Devan to the demigod. Pitrin, to the ancestors, Yanti, go. Pitri Vrata, worshippers of the ancestors. Bhutani, to the ghosts and spirits, Yanti, go. Bhuta Idja, worshippers of ghosts and spirits, Yanti, go. Mat Mai, Yajinaha, devotees, Api, but Mam unto me. Yanti Deva Vrata Devan.
Yanti Deva Vrata Devan.
Pitrin Yanti Pitri Vrata.
Pitrin Yanti Pitri Vrata.
Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja.
Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja.
Yanti Madhya Jinopi Mam.
Yanti
Yanti Deva Vrata Devan.
Yanti Deva Vrata Devan.
Pitrin Yanti Pitri Vrata.
Pitrin Yanti Pitri Vrata.
Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja.
Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja.
Yanti Madhya Jinopi Mam.
Yanti Madhya Jinopi Mam.
Please chant.
Yanti Deva Vrata Devan. Pitrin Yanti Pitri Vrata.
Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja.
Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja.
Yanti Madhya Jinopi Mam.
Yanti Madhya Jinopi Mam.
Yanti Deva Vrata Devan.
Yanti Deva. Yanti Madhya Jinopi Mam.
Yanti Deva Vrata Devan.
Yanti Deva Vrata Devan.
Pitrin Yanti Pitri Vrata.
Pitrin Yanti Pitri Vrata.
Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja.
Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja.
Yanti Madhya Jinopi Mam.
Yanti Madhya Jinopi Mam.
Translation. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods. Those who worship the ancestors go to the ancestors. Those who worship ghosts and spirits will take birth among such beings. And those who worship me will live with me. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. If one has any desire to go to the moon, the sun, or any other planet, one can attain the desired destination by following the specific Vedic principles recommended for that purpose, such as the process technically known as Darsha Paranamasi. These are vividly described in the fruitive activities portion of the Vedas, which recommends a specific worship of demigods situated on different heavenly planets. Similarly, one can attain the Pita planets by performing a specific yajna. Similarly, one can go to many ghostly planets and become a yaksha, raksha, or pishacha. Pishacha worship is called black arts or black magic. There are many men who practice this black art. They think that it is spiritualism. But such activities are completely materialistic. Similarly, a pure devotee who worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead only achieves the planets of Vaikuntha and Krishna Loka without a doubt. It is very easy to understand through this important verse that if by simply worshiping the demigods one can achieve the heavenly planets, or by worshiping the pitas achieve the pita planets, or by practicing the black arts achieve the ghostly planets, why can the pure devotee not achieve the planet of Krishna or Vishnu? Unfortunately, many people have no information of these sublime planets where Krishna and Vishnu live. And because they do not know of them, they fall down. Even the impersonalists fall down from the Brahma Jyoti. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore distributing sublime information to the entire human society to the effect that simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, one can become perfect in this life and go back home, back to Godhead. Prabhupada ki jai. Om jnana timirantasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun miritam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. If you open Bhagavad Gita, just randomly, especially if you're a new person, just gets the book, this verse is a good indication how you're not going to understand what the heck is going on here. What is this about, anyway? There's so many things here that are so foreign to people, so many ideas. Actually, this begins right away with the assumption that death is not the end. Something is going to happen after. And you have your choice. You go to different... You're going to go somewhere. So you can choose where you're going to go. And, of course, this verse was the main verse that Srila Prabhupada would quote in response to the idea which is pervasive in Hinduism, this yatamat tatapat, which means whatever... Mat means opinion, basically. Mat. That is your path. In other words, whatever you believe, take that path and you'll end up in the same place anybody else takes any other path goes. Of course, this doesn't make any sense on the material platform and definitely doesn't make any sense on the spiritual platform either. What you do has consequences. I often think about this. It's something naturally parents do with their children. They try to teach them that what you do has consequences. Don't think you can do anything you want and nothing's going to happen. Everything will be good. Your future will be good. The world is filled with people who are having horrible lives, and much of it because choices they have made. They didn't think there were going to be any consequences for their actions. In fact, the prisons are filled with such people as well. So this is a basic principle of human life, actually, that what you do is meaningful. It has... It's not that there's just... There's no, we could say, absolute truth. There's no pervasive truth. This is a truth that we perceive ourselves in ordinary life. If you do bad things, you get bad results. If you do good things, you get good results. Why is that? That's a law of nature that we can perceive. Why is that? Maybe because there's a lawmaker who's made things happen this way. In relation to this, I often think how... Why is it most people, they think that goodness is a desirable thing? Why should we think that goodness is a desirable thing? If there's no absolute good, there's nothing to measure it by. But still, we have within us, in our core of our being, we just have this sense that goodness is something that's desirable. People should be good, right? We think that way naturally. That's because that's part of the nature of reality. Actually, ultimately, reality is good. We have this term, summum bonum, the highest good. Ancient philosophers, Western philosophers, were looking for this. What is the highest good? So what is... We naturally have this desire to find out what is a good thing. So that's because it's true. It's actually a fact. It's part of reality. Actually, in Krishna consciousness, We're looking for reality. We're not just shopping around, for those of us who have come to Krishna consciousness, looking for something that fits according to my own worldview. People do this they do it in Hinduism, of course, they do it in every religion. People shop around. We hear about people in Christianity, they go to this church, that church. They're looking for one that fits and they feel comfortable in. It's not about who's telling me the truth. It's who's saying what I agree with, basically. That's the idea. But we're looking for the truth, or at least every human being should be looking for the truth. So this idea of goodness, and that we should do good things if we want good things to happen, that's an important characteristic of real progressive human thought. So in any case, here this purport begins. Again, somebody picking up this book for the first time, just jumping to a verse, may not understand the context. That after this is already resolved earlier in the Bhagavad Gita. We've already taken care of this question, whether there's life after death. Krishna addressed that in the beginning, way back in the second chapter. Now we're in the ninth chapter. So that's already been taken care of. Yes, you will go on. This body will die, and you'll go on to something else. So where are you going? That you don't know. Prabhupada would make this point so often. And how unfortunate they are. They don't know that in the next moment they may become a dog, he would say sometimes. You're going. I think of this sometimes when I hear about some accident. You know, somebody's out, they're going, you know, mother and daughter, they're just going out to the mall or something, and then they're in a car accident and they die. They didn't think they were going to die that day. They thought they were going to go on for a long time. So it happens. Always, at every moment it's happening in this world. You think it's going on, it's going to go on, but it doesn't go on. It stops. But of course, where are you going next? You're going somewhere. And how you act in this life determines where you're going to end up. So Prabhupada here, he talks about different destinations people may aspire for. Now interesting, he says, if one has desire to go to the moon, sun, or any other planet, so, of course, today, we want to go to these places. Well, not us, but modern scientists, modern man, he wants to explore because they think that's the only way we can understand things. We have to get out there and search. Actually, it's quite preposterous when you think about it because even according to their views, the universe is practically endless. How much are you going to know? It's like sticking your toe in the water and thinking you're going to swim across the ocean. It's so vast. There's so much to know. But in any case, they think we have to explore. Of course, they have their different reasons. And they try to, of course, sell them also because it costs a lot of money, so you have to sell them to the public. So you say, oh, but we're making so much, you know, advances in medical technology because we're doing it in zero gravity or something like that. But it seems to be more about the ego than anything else. Just like sometimes they ask a mountaineer, why did you climb that mountain? Because it's there. So why do you want to go to the moon? Because it's there. Get off this planet and go there. So Prabhupada says, yeah, you may desire a destination like that. The sun, of course, I don't think anyone's planning to go to the sun anytime soon. But they might want to send some probe up there to have a look around, see things a little better. Or any planet. So the Vedas, he says here, that the Vedas can tell you how to do that. Now, they're not going to tell you to build a spaceship. They're going to tell you how to do something else. More subtle things. Of course, we live in very gross times. Everything is very mechanical. And the idea of what you can do with your mind, subtle aspect, that it tends to be overlooked. In fact, it's even considered in many ways just pseudoscience, you know, the science that the idea that you could transport yourself with your mind. We transport ourselves with our body from here to there, so the mind is just a more subtle aspect of ourselves. So why not that idea? Of course, we have this somewhat of a duality between mind and body. It's a subtle, it's material, but it's still subtle. But you can use it to go to other places. And Prabhupada says if you study the Vedas, you can learn ways to do that. Actually, there are so many things. In Krishna consciousness, of course, we're Gaudiya Vaishnavas, so we're interested in Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and going back to Godhead. And of course, we're interested primarily in Krishna Prema, loving Krishna. That's what we want to attain, pure love for God, which is the highest goal. And that's what we're aiming for. We're not aiming for any of these in-between places. So in any case, the Vedas, they talk about so many other things that most of us don't even know about that are there, especially the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. You do this sacrifice and you can get this result. And there's a whole list in the third chapter, the second canto of the Bhagavatam. It says, if you want this, then worship this demigod. If you want this, then worship this demigod. And it's quite a long list. Then the next verse is a famous akama sarva kamo va moksha kamo daradi tivrena bhakti yogita yajita purusham param. But if you're, no matter who you are, worship Krishna. That's the basic idea. And of course, you'll get everything you want. We often hear this phrase, all your desires will be fulfilled. If you do this, if you worship Tulsi, all your desires will be fulfilled. And sometimes I think, well, I don't know if that's a good idea. Some of the desires I have, I don't know. They're still hidden there, or still lying there. So the idea, it seems to me, is that you won't have any desires. That's the idea. Once you have Krishna, all those other desires, they'll be fulfilled in the sense that you won't have them anymore. You have Krishna, that's all you want. Swamin kritartosmi ramniyachi, as Dhruva Maharaj said. Dhruva had a huge desire. He wanted a kingdom greater than Lord Brahma. But when he saw the Lord, then, what was I wanting? Oh, he was lamenting. Oh, I shouldn't have wished for that. Such a petty thing. So still, people have all kinds of petty desires. Actually, any desire other than Krishna Prema is a petty desire, you can say. Subordinate to that. So in any case, that's there in the Vedas. So as it also, this is, you know, introducing people to what we're doing. Sometimes people can be confused because if they've looked at the Vedas, it's very confusing, of course. It's everything. Nigama kalpa taror galitam phalam. The Vedas are called the desire tree. And they don't only give just one kind of fruit, they give any fruit. Kalpa riksha tree. Anything you want, you can get from the Vedas. Better than any other, more efficiently than you can get it in any other way. So the Vedas, they tell you how to do those things. There was a man, a yogi, he visited when I was living in Potomac many years ago. Some of you may remember he was traveling around ISKCON a little bit, at least on the East Coast. So he had developed certain cities and he was doing demonstrations. I know he did one in New Vrindavan, some other place. And I heard that one of them that he did, well, he did a couple of things. He held it, I heard, he had chains tied to two jeeps and he held them from taking off. And he took an iron rod and pushed it against his eyeball and he bent the rod. So I asked him, actually, I traveled with him. We were in a van together. We were traveling from Potomac to a festival in Philadelphia. And I said, how did you do this or why did you do this? He said, well, I saw somebody doing it in the bazaar and I was so impressed that I wanted to learn how to do it myself. So he went and lived in the Himalayas with some, and he practiced, whatever you do, some kind of meditation, and he learned how to do these things. It took him, I don't know, 10 years or something like that. So people have these desires. They think, whoa, that's cool. Now I may also think, well, that's cool, but I'm not going to spend 10 years half naked in the Himalayas just to get it. You know, I don't want it that bad. So there are people who really want these things badly, and they're willing to do what's required to get them. So the Vedas will teach you how to do that. There's a lot of esoteric knowledge there. So let me move on. I just want to go through this purport again, some of the points here. So Prabhupada says, similarly one can attain the Pita planets. Now this is another thing, we have these names that come up here. You may know in the, of course, there's a lot of criticism about editing, but in the original Bhagavad Gita, the devotees had misunderstood when Prabhupada said the planet of the pitcheries. They thought he said the planet of the trees. So that was the way it was originally there in the Bhagavad Gita. You can go to the planet of the trees. Of course, maybe there is a planet of the trees too. But here, they went to the original and they saw that Prabhupada was talking about the Pitta or Pitri planets. That's where the forefathers go. Now that's kind of, that's always a little bit of a confusing idea, isn't it? Because you think, well, I have forefathers. Are they all there? No, they're not there. I doubt it. It means forefathers who follow particular rituals that are prescribed in the Vedas, and that they have sons who are also offering, making offerings to the demigods or to the rulers of Pitriloka, so that they can, you know, they'll go there and they'll remain there. And it's a kind of heavenly planet. There's heavenly enjoyment there. It's a desirable thing. It comes up a lot in our books, actually. I often wonder, why is this Pitriloka so much talked about? But it is. So, for Karmakandis going to this Pitta planet, it's considered to be a desirable thing. Of course, the idea of the Karmakandis, we just scoff at it. We think, why? Because so many places, we're so fortunate because we hear from Vaishnavas who have the highest realization. So while so many other people are bewildered because they hear about these, you know, like the Bhagavad Gita says, the flowery language of the Vedas. So they may be convinced, well, I really want to go there. I want to make sure my father goes to this Pitriloka. So they do what's required. But it's like everything else in the material world, is a temporary place. But the Karmakandis, they think, well, I'll just keep going there. That's their idea. They don't have the idea of liberation. Their brains are not developed enough to understand, well, maybe you should just get out of this place. Because when you go up, you have to come down. That's just the nature of things. It's like gravity is the nature of things, right? In this, at least on this earth planet. What goes up must come down. So you go to Pitaloka, Pitriloka. You can enjoy there for a long time. It'd be very nice. We read about some of this in the Bhagavatam, descriptions of heavenly places. So it sounds really nice. But eventually, well, you run out of gas. Your plane crashes. You have to come back down. And you have to do it again. But there are Karmakandis who are, you can say, hardcore. They think, that's all right, I'll just keep going there, keep going there, keep going there, eternally, basically. That's their idea. So we don't think that's such a bright idea. Now, Prabhupada mentions so many other planets here, he says, because the verse says you can go to, you know, the planets of the demigods, or the ancestors, or those who, or the place where such beings live, ghosts and spirits. So he mentions some of those here. You can become, he says, a yaksha, raksha, or pishacha. So this is another, you know, we come across these names a lot. If you read Bhagavatam, different parts of the Bhagavatam, we come across these names. Now, the yakshas are the followers of Kuvera. They're kind of an in-between kind of entity. They often are portrayed as being pious souls, but they're also this often portrayed as being demoniac. We know Dhruva Maharaj, of course, he had to fight against the yakshas because one yaksha killed his brother. So Dhruva Maharaj didn't like that, so he was going to destroy the whole race of them. And he was making a good, doing a good job of it. So finally, Swayambhuva Manu asked him to calm down. This isn't right. For one person's misdeed, you're going to destroy their whole race. This isn't right. So they have these mystic powers. Again, people like heaven. You know, sometimes we think, oh, if I could just have this or do that, wouldn't that be nice? If I didn't have to work, or the money just came, money solves so many problems, wouldn't that be great? But, it doesn't solve all the problems, of course. So anyway, these yakshas, they have these mystic powers. They can do, if you read the description of Dhruva Maharaj fighting with them, you know, headless bodies were raining from the sky, and pus and mucus and all those things. So it was quite a ghastly scene. So these are the yakshas. So if you want to live with them, you can. I don't know why you want to, but I was thinking about one thing that kind of interesting is, I wonder who becomes a Yamaduta. Because I was here, I just heard recently, actually, that to train the guards in the Nazi prison camps, one thing they had them do was when they began their training, they trained them. So to begin their training, they gave them a little puppy. And they had to take care of that puppy for like a year or something like that. Then in their initiation, they had to slit the throat of the puppy because they had to, you know, they were conditioning them to be hard-hearted. Prabhupada says like that. Actually, Prabhupada gives the example. He says that's why kshatriyas have to kill. They have to kill animals because otherwise they're not going to be able to kill on the battlefield. And Prabhupada said, oh, just like the, he says, like surgeons, they practice on a cadaver. He said, otherwise, he said, only a gunda can stick a knife into somebody. A gentleman who's trying to be a doctor, he doesn't have it in him to cut somebody with a knife. It's a, you know, it's not an easy thing to cut a knife and to cut open someone's chest or their belly or whatever. So they have to become conditioned to that. So I was thinking, well, how do the Yamadutas do it? Because they're with the Yamaraj. And Yamaraj, of course, is Dharmaraj. So one thing that this tells me is that there are so many inconceivable things in this material world. How we have a certain way, all of us, of course, have a certain perspective on the way things are. And we see also vast differences, even in human life. Like Prabhupada used to tell the story of one little boy. His father was killing some animal, chicken or something, and the boy was screaming, and the father was basically telling him, oh, just calm down, you know, it's no big deal. So the child is reacting one way, and the father is just cold, is not making, not causing any problem for him. So we have all these different kinds of people with, and all mixtures of things too. We often find that people are very contradictory in their, the way they view the world. Just like we, you know, one thing we might say that some people are really against animal slaughter, but they're not against abortion. Well, how can you have those two views in the same head? It's crazy. So people are like that. They're not necessarily rational. Humans are supposed to be rational animals, but the rational part is often missing. So anyway, so these yakshas, they have these mystic powers. And then the word raksha is here. It's interesting. Now, raksha, I looked it up because I wasn't sure. And Prabhupada often translates it as just as a synonym for rakshasa. But the word raksha means protection. Rama Raghava Raksha Ma, right? Raksha means protection. So I came across one explanation, actually this may have been in one of the Sanskrit dictionaries, that the reason rakshasas are, even though the word is connected to raksha, or the word raksha is here also, it means an entity from whom you require protection. That's why the protection fits in with the name, because you wouldn't think that the rakshasas are protecting anything. So that's the idea with rakshas. So you can go to apparently they have a planet, they live somewhere, maybe more than one place, like the yakshas live with Kavera, maybe other places. And then pishachas, now pishacha worship, Prabhupada says, is black magic. So of course there are people who are really, they like that kind of thing also. It goes on still. We know in the Caribbean this is practiced, been practiced for a long time. In India it's still practiced. You want to harm your enemy, you perform some kind of black magic to harm them. We have the experience in our Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this Bishop Kishena was cursed him somehow with some kind of black magic. He got very sick. He told him, I'm going to kill your whole family with my powers. But Bhaktivinoda was so steadfast in his service to Lord Jagannath, really was what he was doing as the magistrate in Jagannath Puri. He said, I got to get rid of this rascal. So he didn't budge from his position. He said, you're not going to sway my judgment, make me deviate from what I know is right. So even though he got very sick, I think his family may have gotten sick. Of course, ultimately, by Krishna's mercy, he was successful. He defeated him. So now, of course, with Prabhupada, the point that he makes here at the end of the purport is that if you can go to all these other places by worshiping these entities, then don't you think that Krishna will reciprocate in the same way? Don't you think that he'll take you back to him? Yes, he will. Now, of course, you have to show that you really want it. Just like I was saying about this person who wanted to develop this mystic power. He really wanted it. He was ready to spend lifetimes. Well, he didn't, but there are those who do. We know. We hear about how, you know, yogis are meditating, generally for liberation, but also they get mystic powers the whole section in the Uddhava Gita in the 11th canto, where Krishna explains all these mystic powers. There are major ones and minor ones. And he says how you do it. It's interesting, actually. We studied that section in Bhagavatam class a few years ago. And they all have some connection with Krishna. How you're connecting with one of Krishna's shaktis. And that's how you're able to attain these, maybe indirectly. But a lot of the meditations where, you know, meditate on the all-pervasiveness of Paramatma or something like that, if you want to get Anima Siddhi or whatever, you need to get these different siddhis. Ultimately, Krishna's behind him. Of course, this makes sense because it's Krishna's power, ultimately. And again, so there are people who, they work hard to get it. So, we also have to work hard to get it. Our hard work is different, of course. It's mostly internal. That's the hardest work because of the demons within us lingering there. All these pishachas and rakshas and so on are there taking over or trying to take over our hearts, influencing us in different ways. We're so conditioned to act in a certain way, especially in the culture that we live in. We're affected by it. The energy is everywhere. It's all going against us, really. That's why association is so important. We find this over and over and over again in our books, the importance of association. Giving up bad association. Rupa Goswami lists it as the two most important characteristics for advancing, or qualities for advancing in Krishna consciousness, that you have to get good association and give up bad association. And what was I just reading today? It was in the fifth canto. Anyway, the idea was, oh, I know what it was. It was Jad Bharat. He's explaining to King Rahugana how you have to associate with devotees. Then the verse says, so who are these devotees? It says, in the society of devotees, at least this is the way Prabhupada translates, there's no discussion of sociology, politics, this, that. There's only discussion of Krishna. That's what sadhu sangha is, talking about Krishna, discussions, glorification of Krishna. And Krishna says he's there. He's there when you do that, when you glorify Krishna. When you chant his holy name, he's there. Like Prabhupada would sometimes say, so amazing, he would say, did you see Narada Muni was there? They had some program, hardly anybody came. Prabhupada said, no, don't be disappointed. You didn't see Narada Muni? He was there. And he would also say the Sunday love feast. And I remember specifically in Los Angeles, he said, yes, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes. He's coming to see you Western American boys and girls chanting the holy names. So that's attractive to Krishna, which is an amazing thing when you think of it, because attracting Krishna, who's all attractive. And that's because, of course, what is it? It's Krishna's internal energy, his Ladini Shakti, his pleasure potency, or Srimati Radharani. All devotion is ultimately coming from her. It's coming from Krishna himself, actually. She's his heart, you might say. His heart and soul is Srimati Radharani. She's, this idea is so amazing, our concept of God that we get from Vaishnava literature, that Krishna wanted to enjoy, but he's one, in one sense, he's one. But within him, he has this lover, you can say. Vladini is Ananda, and prema, all of these things, these ascetic qualities, they're the heart. Radharani is his heart. Actually, you know, in the spiritual world, there are the different shaktis. So the samvit, sandini, and ladini, a little technical, but the samvit potency, your knowledge potency, that's overseen by Krishna. So you might say Krishna's the thinker. He's the intelligence. He's the one behind it all. But, of course, he's not different from his heart. Ladini Shakti, these are not Krishna and these Shaktis, they're one. So, but Srimati Radharani, so what does Krishna do? He's thinking, I want to enjoy my heart. So she manifests. Of course, Prabhupada says, but of course, there's no time, but we have to talk in terms of time. But this is an eternal thing. You can look at it from this perspective. Krishna wanted to enjoy, but it's only me. But this love in my heart will become manifest as Srimati Radharani. So when we chant Hare Krishna or any kind of Krishna Katha, glorification of Krishna, or any of the nine processes of devotional service, that's invested with the potency of Srimati Radharani. That's invested with her bhava, with her heart, with her internal mood. So we're always trying to get closer and closer to that. And one of the ways we do that is to give up all these other desires. Now we look at these in some sense, we just laugh. We think, well, I don't care about that. I don't want to go to the moon. I don't want to go to Pitriloka. What do I care about that? But we have other things hiding there inside, things that we want to happen to us. In fact, even liberation. This is maybe it hasn't come out yet, but I wrote an editorial recently about this. Because Prabhupada is called the aims of life. Because it seems like Prabhupada proposes a lot of different things as the aim of life, right? He would say, for example, the aim of life is to become free of suffering. Or the aim of life is liberation, right? But then I was reading a purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada said, if one desires freedom from material existence, then one cannot get prema. I mean, wait a minute, I thought we're supposed to aim for liberation. So there are different stages, right? We have to, and we're trying to get rid of all these lower ones. Because this question often comes up because so many places, Prabhupada said, we're aiming to go back to Godhead. He named his magazine, Back to Godhead. So we're all thinking, when I die, I want to go back to Godhead. Right? But really what we want is, when I die, I want to be in Krishna Prema. That's really what we want. Before I die, that's when I'm ready to die. When the Krishna Prema is there, then whether I'm here or there, it doesn't matter. This is discussed in the Madhurya Kadambani by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says in the later stages of bhava, the devotee doesn't know whether he's in the body or not. He's out of this world. He's so absorbed in Krishna, it's irrelevant where he is, what his location is. Because he's back to Godhead. Because in one sense, back to Godhead, we have to conceive of things in a certain way. So we have this picture that's drawn for us, that we're inside this coconut-like universe and outside and so on. But, this spatial understanding may not be completely accurate. Things have to be presented as sometimes in a kind of graphical, you might say even metaphorical way, because we don't understand anything outside time and space. But we can understand theoretically that Krishna is everywhere. So wherever Krishna is, then his devotees are there, then Goloka Vrindavan is there, everywhere. Prabhupada said this one time sitting in an airport, I remember somebody asked him about, Prabhupada, wouldn't you rather be in Vrindavan? And Prabhupada said, Vrindavan is everywhere. Vrindavan is here also. So if you can see, you don't have to go anywhere. You can, you're already there. That's the idea. Right? You're already there. So that's really what we're aiming for. We're really not exactly worshiping Krishna so that we can go to Goloka Vrindavan. I mean, of course we are. I mean, in one sense you can say we can desire both those things, at least in our present state. But because it's natural, that's the other thing, it's natural. We want to be there where Krishna's devotees are, obviously. That's where we want to live, that's our home. Prabhupada told us so many times, that's our home, so it's natural. But still there is this other side, we can think of it at least philosophically. It doesn't really matter because you're already there when your Krishna Prema develops. So that means getting rid of all of these other things, and of course Prabhupada has given us so many ways to accomplish that by applying them throughout our life. All right, I'll stop here. Anyone would like to add or subtract? Oh, over here, Vegavati Prabhu. Who's got the mic? Buck the mic.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thanks a lot. Two thoughts came to me early on. One, when you were talking about why people climb mountains, because it's there. I actually read a memoir from a person who had been up in the Himalayas and nearly died, had to be helicoptered out, lost both his hands and part of his face. But he admitted in his memoir that part of the reason he did it was because he could avoid getting to know his wife better. And the other book that I remembered when you were talking, I recently just finished the fifth canto today, so not very many days ago, I read in one of the purports, Bali Maharaj was feeling sorry for Indra because Lord Vamanadeva came before Indra and said, what do you want? And Indra was such a fool that he asked for Bali Maharaj's kingdom of all that. And Bali Maharaj said, even if he had that kingdom for a lifetime of Manu, it's just like a flickering moment in eternity. It's such a worthless thing. So I just wanted to share that.
Yeah. I think how, of course, we're big philosophers. We can talk this way now. But if we're actually presented with it, you know, every man has his price, you know, that saying. So what would our price be? You know, what could Maya offer us? I often think of Haridas Thakur. It's such a nice story where Maya appeared to him. You just think of Maya, how attractive she is. All the attractions of the material world condensed into one female form. So what was Haridas Thakur's reaction? Nothing. Indifference. It didn't bother him in the least. So we have to come to that stage. The material world has no attraction for us.
Hare Krishna, Bhagavan, thank you so much. I found it interesting that you were asking that question to yourself about the Yamadutas, how they become qualified, or you know what process they go through, or what desires they have to attain that position. And then I was just wondering how, when Krishna says in Gita that paritranaya sadurang vinashaya chutuskritam, that he comes to chastise the miscreants, the duskritinas, but then how we as devotees, so we're in Mahaprabhu's line of the Mahavatanyavatar, the most magnanimous, merciful mood of Lord Chaitanya. So what about those of us who have some, you know, feelings of outrage against, you know, demonic qualities, you know, that go on around us in the material world and so on. So this idea of raksha, protection, or kshatriya, which also comes in that way, to right the wrongs, you know, how do we understand that? And then according to the verse, you know, is there worship, you know, could also be, you know, meditation could be part of that. Like, so there's that New Age saying that what you focus on expands. So if you're focusing on something negatively, we don't want that. Is that also kind of a magnetic thought process that could perpetuate that energy?
Of course, it's not our particular duty to punish anyone. I just came across recently, I was surprised, you know, probably we quote the Bible sometime, and he quoted this saying, hate the sin but not the sinner. Prabhupada quoted that. And so that was, I was thinking about in the beginning of what you were asking about, that, you know, we don't want to kill the demons because we don't hate the people, the person, the soul, obviously, that's the person. But we hate that darkness in there, that dark demoniac force that's within them, forcing them to act in a certain way. So that's what we want to destroy. It's also considered legitimate for a devotee to be angry at the enemies of Krishna. Narottam Das Thakur taught that in his song, how we can dovetail all the different bad things, like anger is generally bad, but if it's aimed at the enemy, that's okay. The enemy of Krishna, that can be done. But generally, of course, you know, we're fortunate. One thing is, there are, you know, theoretical situations we might, but well, what about if I was in this situation? And blah, blah, blah. But generally, we're not in extraordinary situations. We live our lives in a certain way, and we can. It's easy for us to just, you know, be constantly thinking, I just want to help people. I want to help people. I want to help them advance, come to Krishna somehow or other. That's our focus. I was talking about focus. So that's where our energy goes. we're focusing on, because that's where Prabhupada's energy was. He wasn't out to destroy the world, to declare war on the demons, not with material weapons, but with spiritual weapons of Krishna consciousness. So we're trained in that way. That's our line. That's how we approach it, benefiting society. Okay, we'll stop here. It's after 6. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.